And it's a Monday morning, and that means it's time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast it during the noontime hour and also on the weekend. Let's bring him in and say good morning to Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and so far, so good.
Yes.
Good morning. Yeah, but I don't think the rest of the day. Anyway, I'm getting out early. I don't get out very often these days. But actually, my bank, which has been closed since early March, finally opened last week, and you can see a banker by appointment. So that's a new thing, and I hope that she keeps the appointment. So that gets me out today. But anyway, I'm mostly in and mostly cooking, as everybody knows by now. And I've complained plenty about the access to fruit and vegetables, which you have to resupply yourself with more frequently than you do things that maybe you can stick in the freezer or cook and then stick in the freezer, which I do. But I must say the quarantine has opened my eyes to meat. I have tried several delivered meats, and by the way, there was a wonderful list. I guess it was on Eater in New York City. I'm not sure, but you can find it on the internet. A list of mail order meat purveyors. Now, on the list was the one that I've been using, DeBraga, D-E-B-R-A-G-G-A. DeBraga is a company that. A butcher of long, long standing that supplies New York City's best restaurants and hotels, and I don't know outside New York City, but I do know here. And, I don't often avail myself of DeBraga. In fact, I very infrequently avail myself until I stayed home. So now I get meat delivered, and if you were listening last week, you know that I bought the most expensive short ribs imaginable. They were came out to, with delivery to my door, $20 a pound. Four enormous short ribs. Now, I'll get into what are short ribs in just a second, but these were beyond extraordinary. The meat, I cooked it just the way I would cook any short rib, which is to say I braised them. Oh, by the way, with the short ribs comes a pint of veal demi-glace, meaning veal stock that has been cooked down to a syrupy consistency, which you use in your with your braised ribs. That you could buy that, by the way, from DeBraga alone. I think it's $15 or $16, that alone. So these were, in essence, a bargain, because when I finally did get to the supermarket a few days ago, they were $16 a pound. It could have even been 16 something a pound. And they were very nice short ribs. I'm not saying my local fancy supermarket didn't have, for that price, wonderful short ribs, but I don't think they're that much cheaper even at my butcher, who is usually less expensive than the fancy supermarket. And even a supermarket, I think short ribs are at least $10 a pound. They're not a cheap meat anymore, because they become so popular. On that note, I have to note that in the last 10 days, I've gotten two emails from friends asking me about short ribs. My friends in Portland, Oregon, bought what they call in Oregon English cut short ribs. Now, I knew what that was, but I have never seen that word English attached to short ribs in New York or even metro area, anywhere here in the Northeast. Technically, the short rib that we think of as short ribs are English cut short ribs, which means they're cut in the same direction as the bone, parallel to the bone, so that each piece has a segment of bone in it, of one bone. Now, the ones that I got from DeBraga were about 6 inches long, very long. Not usually these short ribs are cut into, let's say, 3-inch lengths, half that. But I don't have a meat saw here to go through the bones, so I left them the way it was. And there were four of them coming to 5 pounds. So that's an English cut short rib. The other kind of short rib is flanken, what I call flanken. And in fact, it's not, which is a Yiddish word, and it's the same piece of meat, but instead of being cut in the same direction as the bone, parallel to the bone, it's cut across the bones, and usually in thinner slices than a short rib, which is usually quite chunky. Flanken, you know, if you go to the kosher supermarket, where they charge a fortune for this, by the way, you might find flanken that's cut an inch thick, because that market, the kosher market, knows to braise this piece of meat. On the other hand, Koreans, when they make grilled short rib, they're using what we would call flanken, what I would call flanken. I don't know any other word for it, by the way. And I looked this up, and there doesn't seem to be another word for it. It must be a German word originally. In any case, my English cut, if you want to call them that, short ribs, have, like all short ribs, a significant amount of fat, which will cook off during a long, slow braise. So don't get concerned about that. When you open up the piece of meat, you're going to see this. And by the way, these were quite well trimmed and very, very meaty, because in the end, after braising for hours, slow cooking for hours, I'll get into how I did that, there was each one, there were four, each one was enough for two people. Now, got to say, I made these for Bob's birthday last Monday, and as a birthday dinner, I thought I should be generous. And also, I wasn't prepared for them being quite as meaty as they were. So we each had one with mashed potatoes. It's his favorite thing when there's good gravy around, even when there's not good gravy around, but a lot of butter. So I made him short ribs and mashed potatoes. Then the second time we ate them, I don't think it was the next night, it was a couple nights later, maybe afternoons even, I took one short rib and shred it. First of all, let me say, you've got to skim this very assiduously. If you make it one day, put it in the refrigerator, the next day you'll be able to lift off what amounts to a lid of hard fat, which you cannot reuse. Just throw it away. You don't want to eat hard beef suet. Actually, just even saying it grosses me out. So I did not have time to do that because I procrastinated in making them until Monday morning, and we wanted to eat them Monday night. But I did let it sit. And I do have a gravy separator, meaning a pitcher that has the spout coming off the bottom, because fat rises to the top. Now, you've got to, of course, have to have warm gravy and fat to do this, not hardened. It doesn't work with hardened. And I used it, which gave me a significant amount of beautiful, beautiful, clear gravy, for want of a better word, sauce, but also let me retain all the vegetables that I had put into the braise in another significant amount of gravy. And that I put in the refrigerator, and I allowed that to separate and get the fat hardened again. So that really, that batch was double skimmed. And the other part was just very well skimmed. And I had a bowl full of fat, which in the end I threw away. If you let it sit, you'll see. It'll, even at room temperature, it becomes hard. A sign that it is highly saturated, if not 100% saturated fat. Something you want to eat. So here's what I did with the ribs. And I would do these even with mediocre ribs, which is normally what you get. But first you have to brown the meat. And don't do this over the highest heat, because you'll invariably burn something, and you don't want to do that. And you just want it to get beautifully browned on all sides. Of course, it's not so easy to brown the bone side. Don't worry about that. But there are three other sides that should be browned. I just use a bare skimming of vegetable oil to do this in, because after a couple of ribs, this is going to render enough fat that you don't need any more fat in the pan. And do this in batches if you need to. It depends on how many ribs you're making. I only had four ribs to brown, even though that was 5 pounds of ribs altogether. So I brown it on the side and take the meat out as it browns, and then add your aromatics, meaning carrot, onion, celery, the usual. I diced mine nicely because I knew I wanted to retain the vegetables in the end, and I didn't want a sloppy mess of vegetables. I wanted a nice dice of vegetables. And I used, let's say, for my 5 pounds of meat, I used one largish onion, a couple of carrots, and a couple of ribs of celery. And as soon as you put that in the pan, oh, by the way, if you've collected a lot of fat in the pan, you can, at this point, pour off almost all of it, and then add your vegetables to the pan. I used my a large Le Creuset cast iron enamel. And it's good if you could do this all so in a pot that's big enough to hold all the ribs in one layer, even though invariably that's going to be too deep for all of this. You need the surface. So I don't even know how many quart Le Creuset work perfectly for this. You add the vegetables, and as soon as you add them, it's going to start to deglaze the pan of whatever wonderful browned stickum, fond in French, is on the bottom of the pot. And I also throw in a couple of large bay leaves, and I don't have fresh thyme in this day and age in the house. So I do have very good dry thyme, though, so I put in about a teaspoon of dry thyme. And then 2 cups of red wine. And I happen to have an open bottle of Northeast Italian red wine, but any kind of simple red wine will do. Don't put in your best wine, but put in wine that you would normally drink. And that's why I had an open bottle of wine, because this is the wine I would normally drink. 2 cups of that. And then 2 cups of, let's hope, you have, he's from De Braga, and I added my 2 cups of veal demi-glace, and that was that 4 cups of liquid. Now, if you don't have De Braga demi-glace, good, strong beef broth will do. I don't know what products to tell you to buy. There are some products out there that are apparently good. I hear they're good, meaning demi-glace kind of products frozen in the supermarket, blah, blah. But you need 2 cups more liquid. So 2 cups of red wine, 2 cups of other liquid, and I put in a good heaping tablespoon of tomato paste, which I first dissolve in some of the liquid. You can either scoop out some of your liquid and dissolve it in a little dish with a fork. I like doing that. Or whatever. And then if the liquid is hot, of course, it's going to dissolve a little quicker. So when the liquid starts to get really hot, then you can do that. What else did I throw in there? Well, of course, some salt. I would say just salted my short ribs before I browned them. And then I added maybe another teaspoon of salt. I wasn't sure about the saltiness of the veal demi-glace that I got from De Braga, so I waited to add salt. But I think over the course of this whole thing, I added about a teaspoon of salt and some freshly ground pepper, and I bring that to a simmer on top of the stove, and then I put it in a 250 or 275 degree oven, and I say mine took at least 3 hours in the low oven. And when you, after about a half an hour or so in the oven, take a look. Remember, you brought this to a bare simmer on top of the stove already. It should be sort of perking away. not boiling by any means. And if it is, then lower the heat. I think I had to raise the heat on mine. At 250, it was going a little too slow for my taste, so I made it 275. And it still took 3 hours-ish. You know it's done by poking a two-pronged fork into the meat, and you'll tell, and it should be fork tender. That's what fork tender means. The bone will invariably separate from the meat, and there's a big piece of cartilage along that side of the meat. So when you serve it, it's nice to cut off that cartilage end so that nobody has to do it in their plate. And, you know, just take your sharp knife and get as close to the cartilage as you can. There's actually two layers of meat there. Don't cut off the next to the bone layer of meat because, you know, that's on my, let me go to back to what are short ribs. Short ribs can be the end of the ribs of like a rib roast, which are the best, and which I'm pretty sure what these were. I'm only familiar with this form, this long form, let's call it, of rib roast, let's call it short ribs, because at my barbecue joint here in Brooklyn, hometown, they do a smoked beef rib, and I always say it's a dinosaur rib because it's so enormous, but that's what these short ribs were like. But of course, and by the way, a smoked short rib from hometown is probably smoked at about 250, 275 over many hours, which is what makes it so fall apart tender. Anyway, then there are other short ribs. You can even have short ribs from what's called the plate. Now, the plate on a cow, on cattle, is the same cut as bacon on a pig, or also called, what are they calling? It'll come to me in a second. It's a very popular fresh cut now, fresh pig bacon. Anyway, the plate is traditionally what pastrami is made from. So, and we all know how fatty pastrami can be. So I would say that most of the short ribs that I ever see in a supermarket, in a regular old supermarket, are plate ribs. And they're mostly fat. I never buy those. And the same goes with flanken, by the way. I often pick up a package of flanken, and it's all white. I mean, there's hardly any meat in there at all. So that could also be from the plate. Then there's chuck short ribs. Now, chuck short ribs, or the chuck is basically the shoulder. The short ribs that come from the chuck are in between the two. They're never as meaty as the rib ones, and they're never as fatty as the plate ones. So, and you, by the way, nobody is labeling these in the supermarket. In a kosher market, there is a distinction because both the plate and, well, all three kinds of short ribs are actually kosher. They're all four-quarter cuts of meat. But in the case of the rib, short ribs, or flanken, that is often called breast flanken, even though it's not. The plate is more the breast. Anyway, you're not going to see these labels on any meat, so you just have to use your eyes and decide, is this going to cook up as mostly fat? Which isn't so bad, necessarily. Or is this going to cook up very lean, as did my fancy short ribs? You know, not so fancy, as I'm saying. I'm thinking, you know, $20 a pound delivered to my door is really a better, and with a pint of veal demi-glace, is really a better deal than my $16 or $17 a pound at the market around the corner. The first night we had them braised, as I said, with mashed potatoes. Bob is in heaven. He also is into meat lately, as I am, so he was happy to get a whole short rib. But it was really too much. So the next meal, we had it with pasta. I happened to have a half a pound of ridged paccheri. Paccheri is the largest tube there is. It's a real Neapolitan form of pasta. And in fact, when, oh, by the way, the word paccheri, it's interesting. The word paccheri is related to the word patch. In Yiddish, patch and tuchus.
Tuchus.
I'm sure Marshall's heard that one before.
Tuchus, most certainly.
Patch and tuchus was a slap on the ass.
Yep.
So, yeah, a paccheri in Neapolitan dialect, which they got from their Austrian occupation, that's the connection, means slaps, because to the Neapolitan ear, when you lift up the pasta, the cooked pasta, which gets flabby and these big tubes collapse, it does sound like maybe slaps. But I noticed the other day, because I poured out this pasta, dry pasta, from the jar it was in, and I said, you know, even dry, it sounds like slaps. There's another word for it in Italian, schiaffoni. But anyway, I happen to have these in the house. I thought that's the perfect pasta for a real chunky, meaty sauce. So I took my gravy that had all the vegetables in it, now had hard fat on top, which I lifted off. So I had a very lean vegetable and gravy sauce. And I had almost 2 cups, about it. That was aside from the clear sauce, which was still in the refrigerator. So I took that, and I heated up one of the short ribs until it was really heated through, so I could easily pull it, like pulled pork, but pulled short rib, into big strands, which was so juicy and almost melt in your mouth, really, meat. And I mixed it with all these, the gravy and the vegetables, and we had that on paccheri with grated cheese. Well, let me say, I served the grated cheese thinking, oh, well, this will make it at least a little Italian-y. No, that's not true. This could easily be a dish from up north somewhere. You know what? We forgot to put the cheese on because it was so delicious the way it was. And so the next night that I served the rib, now, so we got 3 He-Man meals out of these $100 worth of ribs, and I easily could have done 4 meals for 2 people. That's 8. So this serves 8 people. $100 worth of meat for 8 people, not bad, this meat. Anyway, the last night, listen, I'm watching, now that I'm home all the time and not able to do my normal chores, I watch way too much TV. Including even a cooking show or two, and was flipping stations the other day and came across Lydia Bastianich, who I have to say does a very nice program. She made barley, which, you know, if you're stuck in the house with nothing to eat, barley is there. At least in my house, I always have barley around. Mainly to make soups with barley, but I never think to make it as a side dish unto itself. But what Lydia did was she boiled up the barley with carrot, onion, and celery, just the 3 vegetables diced up, cooked the barley. I cooked my pearl barley that I have for about 35 minutes with those, just with those 3 vegetables, nothing more. And in the end, Lydia stirred in quite a bit of butter and grated cheese, and that sounded awfully good to me. However, I had a lot of mushrooms to use up. Now, think back a couple weeks. I am trying to buy my produce so that some of it will hang on for at least 10 days, and I found fennel does that. Mushrooms certainly do that. So I had these mushrooms. They did need to be cooked. So I chopped them all up, sautéed them in some butter, and instead of adding butter to the barley, I add these buttery, sautéed chopped mushrooms. That was pretty good. But then, why not have short rib and gravy on top of that? So that's what I did. 1 short rib cut into 4 pieces, a half of a short rib Nobody was complaining that that wasn't enough meat. It was. On top of this mushroom, barley, and vegetable, let's call it pilaf, and gravy, and the rest of my reserve gravy. So that really, I thought, I'm going to do that again. Now, the only hard work about braising anything is browning the meat. After that, I like to stick it in the oven for more than one reason. First of all, it all cooks more evenly than if it's just bottom heat. And you don't have to do anything. Maybe halfway through a three-hour cooking, you go in and turn the meat around. If you're antsy, you can do that three times. But truly, unattended cooking, as they call it. Not unintended, unattended. So too much TV.
Yes. Well, especially if you watch the cooking shows, you get sick with what people do to food nowadays.
Well, you know what? Guy Fieri is the most sickening on TV. I think he has some charm himself, and I understand why he's popular. But if I see another, you know what? When he gets to the describing of the food, I turn it off. I like to see the making of it. Not that I'll ever do. Not, you know, there's hamburgers every single day. The other show he has is the grocery games.
Yeah,
and that depends on who's contending. Sometimes I'm engaged, sometimes I'm not. I got to say, I don't tape anything. Although I am in love with Trisha Yearwood.
That show's not a bad show. You're right. No, it's not a bad show at all.
Listen, the woman really cooks. She's a performer, so she knows how to do that. She really likes to eat. I can see. And she sings like a bird, and she's married to Garth Brooks. I mean, what could be bad here?
Yeah.
And also, she's not afraid of being chubby on camera. So that's also good.
Well, you know, I do like Guy's Grocery Games, but I've gotten to watch that. But one of the things that devastated me when I found out there's a chef that always was a judge there, and Carl Ruiz. He was a very funny guy from New Jersey. And I found out that the guy died like 3 years ago, and he was such a nice guy. But that show with Guy Fieri is a fun show to watch because you see sometimes celebrities, sometimes normal people cooking.
Mostly normal people.
Yeah, and they have to
cook. And the other
things.
One is Diners.
Drive-ins and Dives.
Right, which is hamburgers, advanced courses in hamburger.
That's right. Hamburger 202.
I don't know. You know, I sometimes say, oh, I would eat that. But most of the time I say, oh, my God.
I know.
Who eats that?
We wonder why America has a weight problem. There you go.
Right.
All right.
So this morning I happened to cross a list done by my very longtime friend John Mariani, the restaurant critic. He's been restaurant critic for Esquire magazine I can't even list all the publications he's worked for. And he also has a newsletter. I don't know if it charges it. It could be free, but I get it. And he did a list of what I'm missing, because he's, of course, holed up in his house in Westchester. And his list is global. He's missing this in Berlin, he's missing that in Madrid, and he is a global guy. He's always traveling with his wife, Galina, and he has two grown sons now who also write for his newsletter. But I was thinking, what am I missing? And what I am missing the most is not somebody else's food, but being served and not having to clean up after myself.
There you go.
And that was what my mother always said we went out to eat for, and now I totally understand why we go out to eat.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell. I was just going to say, to wrap it up, I like making short ribs. I like eating short ribs. I make them a different way. But when I used to go out, if I went to in West Cornwall, Guy's place, and be served short ribs by him, it's a whole different experience.
Well, maybe I should call Guy and ask him what he's doing. I must say, these were not only the best pieces of meat that I ever bought, but they were the best. They came out as the best short ribs I ever made, and I was happy they lasted 3 nights. By the way, I also make short ribs with Guinness. This is my new thing, you know, since we were on the Queen Mary 2, and one of the best things on the Queen Mary 2 was their Guinness stew with in a pastry shell. I've been making things with Guinness, and in that case, you want to use half Guinness and half beef broth as your liquids. And I like to make my Guinness stew as they did on the Queen Mary, with a lot of carrots and parsnips.
All right. We are out of time.
We are definitely out of time, and that means I have to finish emptying the dishwasher.
All right. Well, go empty the dishwasher. I'll speak to you next week. Have a good week.
Have a great week, everyone.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio.